from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Trenny Kuznarek of NBC Sports Boston. She's always a fun person to speak with. And we discuss the Patriots, their big win over the Baltimore Ravens, and we have a little bit of a debate as to whether game manager is a pejorative term for a quarterback. I happen to not think that it is. Also, we talk about the monumental hiring in MLB, Kim Ng, the first female general manager, and hopefully not the last, in Major League Baseball. We discuss that with Trenny. And we also ask her if she thinks that the Olympics will be held in 2021. Trenny spent a lot of time covering the Olympics. She was supposed to be in Tokyo for the 2020 Summer Olympics. Obviously, that didn't happen with COVID. Ellen, I have to ask you, obviously, big win for the Patriots. Did Cam Newton have that I'm going to win the game swag this week? Was that the difference?
Well, if anyone's been listening to this podcast, you will realize that every prediction I have made so far has been wrong. And last night was no different. He has lost every game that he wore gray to. And so I thought he was going to lose. But I guess I was mistaken because it was much more silver than gray.
Okay.
He wore, obviously, I'm sure everyone has seen it by now, but it's a matching silver suit, no jacket, with a navy blue turtleneck. His mask worn under his nose per his usual style, and a fez.
Yeah. Is there a harder hat to rock than a fez?
I would say no. And it's not the first fez he has rocked, so we know he has fez rocking potential.
Okay.
But it's just outrageous whenever you see it. Like, are we in Casablanca or is this Foxborough? I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you know, I think some questionable outfit choices from Cam Newton, but he made all the right choices and all the right moves on the field, and the Patriots get the win. So we'll talk about that and more up next with Trenny Kuznarek.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, as promised, we're joined by Trenny Kuznarek of NBC Sports Boston, one of my good friends. Trenny, it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you virtually. I haven't seen you in like, let's see, are we going on 8 months?
Yeah.
That I've seen you in person?
I know. It has been a
while.
And I got
very dressed up for the occasion. I put on a clean workout shirt and a clean sports bra, but my hair is still like sort of sweaty and disgusting from a run. So hi, everybody.
But that's why it's good. It's a podcast. So speaking of looking good, how about the New England Patriots on Sunday night? They get the 23-17 victory over the Baltimore Ravens. I think they surprised a lot of people with that victory, Trent. Does it change how you feel about this team now that they've won two in a row and they're 4-5?
Yes. And I'm almost like a little loath to admit that because I was really hell-bent on the fact that this team was garbage, hot steaming garbage. But I have to admit, they showed me some things last night where I found myself thinking, okay, their schedule is not that tough down the stretch. They could very easily get to 8-8 or 9-7 and be, especially if they expand the playoffs. Like, let's say they have to take a week or two off and then schedules are condensed and they then expand the playoffs to add two more teams. Why couldn't the Patriots? They're 10th in the AFC right now. And if they would expand, they'd go to eight teams, right? Or
yes,
are they
yes.
at eight teams?
So no, it's you know, right now it's going to be seven teams per conference. But to yes. your point, if they lose games to COVID, then it's 16 teams, which is eight teams per conference. And the Patriots would not be in a bad position, especially right. considering some of these teams like the Browns and the Titans have to play each other. So there are other losses on the schedule for some of these other teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at it. I think what was most impressive last night, Chris, one was defense. I felt like they simplified things. And finally, Bill Belichick put aside whatever it was that was keeping him from playing guys like Kyle Duggar and Chase Winovich. Like, I don't understand how Chase Winovich, a quarter of the way through the season, was everybody's like team MVP. And then all of a sudden he was playing like 12 snaps a game.
Yeah.
I want to know what he did to make Bill mad. I also think that offensively, they simplified things and they went back to relying heavily on their run game, which then doesn't force Cam Newton to pass as much and only has him passing in high percentage situations. So you're not putting, like, this isn't the days of Tom Brady, right, where you can put the entire offense on the shoulders of the quarterback. It's more of a team effort. And I think that maybe the last couple of games they've figured that out a little bit. And have found out ways to take advantage of the weapons that they do have, even if those weapons aren't very plentiful.
Yeah,
also,
I would agree
Ryan
with you.
Ryan Izzo with a catch last night.
Yes, they actually threw a pass to a tight end. Yes. To your point about Chase Winovich, I mean, he played 65 of 66 snaps, so he only missed one snap. They played him off the line, which was a little bit different. I think they wanted more athleticism out there against that Ravens rushing attack. You know, the Ravens had run all over the Patriots last year, rushing for more than 200 yards. This time, they only got 115, and really, it was the Patriots' rushing attack that stood out, led by Damian Harris, the 22 rushes for 121 yards, 5.5 yards per carry. It's pretty clear to me, Trenny, at this point in the season, that they're looking at Cam Newton as basically a caretaker quarterback. He's caretaker Cam. It's sort of like the Hippocratic Oath of quarterbacks. First, do no harm. Don't turn it over. Don't make any mistakes. We'll work around you. Because last night, they dropped back to pass 19 times. That includes Jakobi Meyers' touchdown pass, so for a touchdown pass from a wide receiver, and they ran it 39. It seems like they know their offense is limited, and they sort of want to limit Cam Newton's exposure.
I mean, I don't want to take that much credit away. I don't think I'm just going to go so far as to say he's just a game manager, that he's like...
He is, though. First. He is. That's how they're using him.
He's more than just a game manager in the sense that he's also a playmaker. He might not make the prototypical quarterback plays. He might not drop back in the pocket and chuck a, you know, 65-yard touchdown pass a la Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. But if you're in a bind and you don't have wide receivers that can break free of their defenders, which we've seen happen a lot this season, they don't have a tight end that can get out, you know, get away from coverage and get open and, you know, open in the end zone or open in the open field. And then you need Cam Newton to keep the ball and run it or do something with it. And he's more than Trent Dilfer. Like, when I think of a game manager, I will always think of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Trent Dilfer. And that's not who Cam Newton is. Cam Newton is an athlete. He's a playmaker.
Sure.
He's just not a guy that's going to win a game. You can't go like pass for pass with him.
Yeah, they just don't have the weapons, and that's where we agree. I mean, I don't think that they have the weapons around him to allow him to be the playmaker with his arm, at least he's been in the past. You know, people were sort of knocking him. Like, he threw a touchdown pass for the first time since the Las Vegas game in this game, and he threw it to Rex Burkhead. But we're 9 games into the season, and he doesn't have a touchdown pass to a wide receiver or a tight end. To me, that reflects more on that group than it does Cam Newton. And I just think with these limitations, there's two ways you can go. You know, one is sort of the Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady route, which is like, hey, we need you guys to lift these guys up. The other one is sort of the way I think they're going with Cam, which is, you know what, we'll ask you to do a little bit less. We won't ask you to do the heavy lifting. The running game will do the heavy lifting. And then when we get in the red zone, you can do your thing.
But if you really look around the league, it's more so going to that dual threat quarterback.
You're right. Totally right.
And so, you know, it's to me that this is, I think, what we all expected the Patriots might have to do. It just took them longer, I think, for various reasons to adapt. Like, I feel like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like most people looked at, okay, Tom Brady leaves. Who cares? Bill Belichick's a genius. You can plug Chris Gasper in behind center or Trenny Kazanerick in behind center, and the Patriots will find a way to win. But it's not that simple. It's still the NFL, and there's still people who are trying to win week in and week out. And if you don't have any tight ends and you don't have good wide receivers and you have a quarterback who's been injured and hasn't played a full season since like 2015, it's going to take a little time. And you have to completely revamp your offense that you had to fit someone who isn't at all like the quarterback who was there for 20 years. So, of course, it was going to take some time.
Yeah, I think that's a great point in terms of revamping. You and I will have to agree to disagree on the game manager thing. And by the way, I don't think game manager is a pejorative. I mean, I think that it's a skill. And in the beginning, like, Tom Brady was a game manager in the beginning of his career in 2001. Not every guy can do it. Like, Jameis Winston can't manage a game. That's why he's a backup. there are times you need to be a game manager. So for me, it's not a pejorative. I think it's great that
there are times when you need to be a game manager. I do think it's a bit of an insult. Like, I don't think there's a quarterback out there who, like, when he meets with the team at the combine and they're like, what kind of quarterback do you envision yourself as? And they're like, game manager.
No one wants to do it, but it's still, I mean, what do you call, okay, take the name away and take the fez away and all the swag from Cam Newton. What would you call a quarterback who was 13 of 17 for 118 yards and a touchdown with no turnovers?
Efficient.
Okay, fine. Efficient. I would say that quarterback is efficient. I would say he's also being managed. It's you know, don't lose the game. And I think that's been the most important thing the last two games for Cam. No turnovers. The prior three games, he had 6 turnovers. That's made a big difference. And that leads me to my next thing with the Patriots. So I'm one of those people who believes in the path. I think they can still make the playoffs. That has more to do, I'd say, with my lack of faith in a team like the Dolphins. I know they've been rolling with Tua Tagovailoa, but that's my lack of faith in them, my lack of faith basically in some of these other AFC teams. But my question to you is, the way the Patriots won this game, is it sustainable? Because to me, it seems like it's a very narrow path to victory. Like, they got up 23-10 and it was sort of hold on for dear life.
I can't imagine that every single team they play going forward is going to be like, you just go ahead and run the ball. We're not going to stuff the box, right? Like, teams are going to adjust to it and force them to make adjustments. And it's not that they don't think the coaching staff has the skill to do it. I don't know that they have the talent to implement it.
That's a great point. I'll tell you this. I thought this was the first win of the season where I tip my cap to the coaching staff and I say, this one belongs to Belichick. Give Belichick the game ball. I thought the Ravens got Belichicked and Josh McDaniels as well. They had a great game plan to slow down the running game of the Ravens. And then the biggest play of the game in my mind was the double pass, Jacoby Myers to Rex Burkhead. I mean, they pulled out, you know, everything in their bag to get this win. So I tip my cap to Belichick, but the reality is, you need an elite quarterback to have the type of sustained success the Patriots have had the last 20 years. And that's why when Bill Belichick got his backup last week, when, you know, your colleague, Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, asked him very artfully the question about the drafts, I thought what was interesting about the answer was, here's this guy who always says, you know, every year is different. It's what have you have to prove yourself again every year. And when he was asked about the drafts, he immediately went back to, well, you know, look at our record the last 20 years. I've seen a lot worse. But the follow-up to that that nobody asked was, yeah, but for 20 years you had Tom Brady and now you don't. And I agree with you on this. A lot of people around here thought that what Bill was doing was just sort of magic, Trenny. He could just sprinkle his Patriots pixie dust on any player. You could have any Johnny Foxborough at quarterback and he was going to go 12-4. And I think what we've learned is he's still a great coach and he still does great things and pulls out wins like he did last night. But it's a lot harder to get to 12 wins when your quarterback doesn't have the skill set around him and when he's at a point where he can't carry the entire team.
Well, and he pulled that out last night, and he's done it once. He wasn't able to do it against.
In nine games.
He got close against the Chiefs.
They were close against the Seahawks.
Close against the Seahawks. But now the Seahawks, their warts are showing how bad of a defense they are. So, I mean, again, not to take anything away from the win against the Ravens. It's by far their best win of the season.
Very impressive.
The most complete win. Very impressive win. But, you know, Bill Belichick says it doesn't matter what you did last week. And so it's not. Like, if they go out this week, if they play Houston, right?
Houston, correct.
They've got they go out against the Texans, and they barely beat the Texans. Like, they barely beat the Jets. Or they lose to the Texans, then that Ravens win doesn't mean anything anymore.
And I just want to say, for the record, as we wrap up the Patriots segment, game manager is not a pejorative. So Cam Caretaker, my new nickname for him, not a pejorative. He's as the Patriots say, do your job. He's doing his job. Speaking of jobs, a monumental hiring in Major League Baseball, Trenny, Kim Ng hired as the general manager of the Miami Marlins. She is the first female general manager in Major League Baseball. She's also the first female in any of the 5 major sports, because I'm going to throw MLS in there, in North America, to be sort of the head of player personnel. You've covered baseball for a long time. You worked at MLB Network. You know that culture really well. How significant of a milestone is this?
I mean, it's huge. It's huge. Like, to me, you can't underscore the importance of this hiring, because if, you know, a friend of mine always says, you can't be it. If you can't see it, you can't be it. So you can say all you want to keep to young women. Oh, if you want, you can do anything you want. You can be the coach of a football team if you want. But does a little girl actually think she can be the coach of a football team if she never sees a female as a coach of a football team? Oh, you love baseball and you want to run a baseball team? You can do that. Now you can say, look at, you can do that. Look at Kim Ang in Miami. Look at, you know, it took a lot more time for her than it probably should have.
Absolutely. She has 30 years in the game. Her resume is out of this world.
It's unbelievable. She interviewed for six jobs before she got this one. She's 51 years old. She went to the University of Chicago. She worked in the front office for the Yankees and the Dodgers, two perennial winners and two teams, by the way, who have won recently, not just because they throw a bunch of money at guys, but because they drafted really well, which she was an integral part of with both organizations, and play the free agent market well. Obviously, LA better than New York, but she still was a part of those two franchises. And yet it wasn't until now, until one of the few minority owners in baseball, and Derek Jeter, and who knew her from his time with the Yankees, said, you know what, we're going to take that step. This is a chance that she finally deserves. It's like I said today, and this is probably like a bit crass, but I said, if she had different body parts, she would have been a general manager 10 years ago.
I like the way you put that.
It's just that simple. And if she was white and had different body parts, she would have been a general manager 20 years ago. She would have been in the same, we would have been talking about Kim Ang in the same way that we were talking about Theo Epstein, Chaim Bloom, David Stearns, people like that one's not as popular with people because he's the Brewers GM.
No, but you're right. He's one of those wonder kids.
He got hired at 30 years old.
Yeah.
What did he do to, he seems like he, you know, knows what he's doing, but it's not like he's gone and won a title. You know, he's taken the Brewers to more consecutive postseasons than any general manager before him. But like, if Kim Ang's name was Jim Smith, she might have done exactly what those guys did at 28, 30, 35 years old. And said she had to wait till she was 51 for someone to give her the chance. And now she is unfortunately probably going to have to perform at a higher level to harsher standards than her male counterparts. I mean, that's the unfortunate reality of where we still are with women in predominantly male positions.
Yeah, it's true. And the interesting thing you brought up, you know, Chaim Bloom and Theo Epstein, and you could talk about someone like James Click, who's in Houston now and came up through the Rays system. What's interesting to me is there's been this shift in baseball, obviously, towards analytics and these sort of super educated GM. But what's interesting to me about that is that Kim Ang actually has more playing experience than a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
Kim Ang played softball at the University of Chicago, and you see that. So if this is the trend in baseball where it's like you don't need playing experience, and I've never thought that you do, but the trend is sort of these highly educated, analytical people, then there's no reason there can't be a Kim Ang or other Kim Angs, because baseball has shifted now, and it's no longer a prerequisite to have baseball playing experience at the college level or in the minor leagues to lead an organization. So if the idea is that this is based on brain power and competency and ability to evaluate players and ability to be innovative in your means of evaluating players and procuring players, there's no gender that has a monopoly on that.
I would say there's no gender, there's no race, there's no ethnicity. And we do not have enough people who don't look exactly the same running baseball teams or football teams for that matter, or basketball teams for that matter. The NBA is obviously the most, I would say, culturally and gender diverse of all the leagues. I can't understand this. Like, I can't understand the mindset of looking at someone and thinking that they are and are not capable of something simply because of who they're like, how they're born, or who they are.
Yeah.
Like that to me just doesn't, I don't understand why David Stearns was more qualified than Kim Ang for the Brewers job. And again, it's no disrespect to David Stearns. He's a nice GM. He's done a good job, but I've never understood why people look at someone and say, oh, so they won't respect her the same. They won't listen to her. They won't listen to him. They don't know how to play the game. You know, there's all these things that shouldn't matter that I'm hoping now she can dispel some of those myths, but that's also a lot of pressure to put on one person.
It's tough to be a trailblazer for anybody in any field.
Yes, because think about it too. Now the microscope is going to be on her. Are you bringing in other women? Are you bringing in other minorities? Like, what are you doing for the greater community? It's not like you can just go in and be a GM, like all those other guys I mentioned. She has to go in and she's got to be a diversity consultant and a general manager, and she has to be a voice for women and a voice for Asian Americans. It's unfair to me what we put people who are, you know, not white males, the pressure and the responsibility we put on those people to make the changes that other people around them should be helping them make.
Trini, I want to jump in here just to ask you. So you also work in obviously a male-dominated field. And obviously, it's a little different than what Kimang is dealing with right now. But could you share some of the stories or like the struggles that you've dealt with while working in sports media?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, it's like it's still the most common question I get, which tells you how far we haven't come.
Yes.
Right. Like, even though I'm not the only female in sports in Boston. The fact that that's even literally, no matter what show I do, I still get asked that question. And that should tell you that like, we haven't come that far. Like, we haven't come far enough that it's still just an accepted role and an accepted norm that there are women talking about sports. I still go. And I know that Twitter is just like a small part of like what people think,
but it feels like it's so much,
but it feels like it's a lot, but it also is like, it's a community where people share thoughts. And when I watch Doris Burke during the NBA playoffs, there are a group of people who comment on her performance. And it's like, she's the best. She's so great. You know, I love listening to her. But then there's people who are like, I just hate listening to a woman.
Ugh. Yeah.
I hate listening to her awful voice. Mm. I don't like Doris her this. Best. I don't. Or how about like when Maria Taylor covered, I think it was a Monday Night Football game, and then did NBA on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that Chicago, the host in Chicago, like talked about her outfit and how she looked. Like, are we really still doing this in 2020? Yeah. Is this really still something that we have to talk about? I mean, I feel fairly lucky, you know, early on in my career, I probably had more obstacles of like people being rude, people not taking me seriously, players like overstepping boundaries, you know, getting my phone number from someone or trying to get my phone number and trying to ask me out or like corner me in a clubhouse or like drop a towel to make me feel uncomfortable. Now that doesn't happen. But part of that is one, I've been in the industry a long time. So across most sports, I've covered most athletes. And so I, and also quite frankly, I'm older. I feel like I'm also really fortunate to work somewhere that I've never felt marginalized because of my gender. Like, I don't ever feel like anybody at NBC, you know, doesn't value my opinion. If I want to write a column, I can write a column. If I want to talk about something that's social, I can talk about something that's social. If I want to talk about sports, they trust my sports opinion. But I can assure you that not everyone is as lucky as I am. Like, there are a lot of women that I know that still like they're dismissed.
But even what you said about your experience when you were younger about being in the locker rooms or the clubhouses or whatever, like those are experiences that would have turned a lot of women off. They would have just said, this just isn't for me, things like that. And so do you think that having a general manager who is a woman is going to actually inspire other women to do this? Because I think there's so much more to it than just seeing it and being it. It's more just changing the culture of sports in general.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Ellen. I think obviously it's a harder mountain to climb because we've been trying to change. I mean, think about Jackie McMullen. Think about how like Jackie Mack, when she first started in the industry, and she's probably what, Chris, is she in her like late, would you put her like late 50s maybe?
I'm not going to guess age, but I mean, Jackie's one of my great.
Chris is like, I'm not going to guess the age of another woman.
She's one of my great.
I'm
going to
say she's probably
mentors.
In her 50s.
You know, very
she was.
Smart.
I mean, she was covering stuff, you know, in the mid 80s.
In the 70s and 80s, where she was physically removed from a locker room. So that's not happening anymore. But I feel like even in the early 90s, it was in the early 90s, right? In the Patriots locker room when Lisa Olsen was asked to leave, right? And that was in 92?
Yeah, that was one of the more despicable incidents in the history of the Patriots when she was basically sexually harassed in the locker room and then she was asked to leave. And then she was banned from the locker
room. To leave. I mean, that's the 90s. And I mean, the 90s may feel like a long time ago for some people, but, you know, for those of us who grew up in the 90s, it doesn't feel like so long ago. You know, it's 30 years, less 28 years ago only that somebody was removed. And I think, you know, a place where I would like to see more inclusion, and I think that really can have the biggest impact on how we tackle gender and like and more sensitive subjects in sports is sports talk radio. Mm-hmm. Like the sports talk radio landscape, especially in larger markets, really dominates the conversation. And I think that too often those conversations are dominated by the same type of person, middle-aged white men, and who don't think, and they're, you know, it's not that they're innately sexist or innately racially insensitive, but they don't have experiences that make them think about the language they use or how they talk about situations or what they may see and laugh about and allow. You know, if you don't have someone in the room that says, you know, that's not acceptable anymore and we can't talk like that. And that's not being PC, by the way. That's just being a good human being.
And also following the law.
Yeah, it is also following the law. But we don't, like, sports is like the last bastion of where, you know, you can say a coach or a manager can say like, ugh, they played like they had skirts on today. Like, that's not okay.
That's not
and
okay.
We shouldn't be excusing that language. Like, we shouldn't be spending entire segments talking about Maria Taylor's outfits. We should be spending entire segments about how Antonio Brown shouldn't be on a football team anymore.
Preach.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on that one. And I thought that, you know, loss or, the head of the
or,
Saints was a little bit of
you
karma.
Know, talking about, you know, rather than saying, I just wish the athletes would stop talking about social justice issues. No, this is an incredible platform to enact actual change and get people to pay attention to it. All due respect to my friends in local radio here, look around.
You're right.
It's the same type of voice talking.
It is kind of homogeneous.
That doesn't mean that it's not a good show or it's not an informative show. You know, I got to give my friend Felger some credit. I think that he has been more thoughtful in the last couple of years about how he talks about certain subjects. And the way that he approaches certain things that I think maybe he hadn't been thoughtful about in the past, but like pretty easy to say a guy plays like a girl and not think twice about it. If there's not a woman in the room to say, hey guys, that's not appropriate. Or there's not even a woman on the air, but a woman that's in programming producing or some other thing that says, hey guys, no, that's not okay. And we're not going to talk like that on this show. Or I'm going to suspend you because I'm in a position of power. If there's no one in those positions of power, then nothing ever changes.
You're totally right. And these are sort of, you know, cultural issues. So to swing it back to Kim Ng, with your experience in baseball and baseball culture, you know, one of the things I always wonder about, particularly with some of these Ivy League type GMs, you know what it's like in a baseball clubhouse. I would say in general, in a lot of ways, it can be a pretty homogeneous place. Now, obviously, there are different cultures in there. So how do you think that Kim Ng will be received in the clubhouse by the players that she is basically the boss of and the players that she's really going to decide their fate?
You know, I mean, I'd like to think that no matter who is the GM, there are going to be some people in the room who think that person is doing a good job and some people who think that person is doing a not good job. That's okay, right? Like if you don't like an acquisition that your general manager made, I can't imagine that every Red Sox player loved Dave Dombrowski, right?
Sure.
If we're going to like,
he was around the players a lot. He seemed to have a pretty good relationship, but you're right. It's hard to believe that every single player was like,
I'm sure
I love
there are
Dave.
Players who thought he was a dope, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure there were players that, I'm sure there's players that loved Alex Cora, didn't like Alex Cora. But what's different about that situation, what I hope will happen in Miami, is that if they don't like Kim Ng, if somebody in there doesn't like her, it's not because she's a woman. And if there is someone who expresses and makes a derogatory comment towards her, that judges her based on her gender as you know, tied to her ability versus what she's actually doing, that there is another player in that clubhouse, that someone they respect on the team says, she's good at what she does. And if you don't want to like what she does, that's fine. But don't ever criticize her simply for her gender. Like that's, I think that's how change happens, is when it's no longer accepted that again, someone's gender, race, ethnicity, religion, whatever it is a barometer for their ability.
Their job performance. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point, Trent. I mean, I think that's really sort of the true definition of equality. I mean, you know, Kim Ng could turn out to be a horrible general manager, but she could be a horrible general manager in the same way that, you know, Brody Van Wagenen was for the Mets, just because she's not, you know, good in the role. It has nothing to do with gender. And that's sort of true equality. I want to ask you, in your mind, what's sort of like the next frontier? You know, I've been thinking about this a little bit. I feel like the next thing we could see that would be huge and would break a glass ceiling in professional sports would be a coach. I sort of feel like that's the next thing we could see. Somebody like Becky Hammond. What in your mind is the next frontier?
I mean, a head coach for sure. I mean, I think that to your point, while the general manager technically runs the team, it's still a business position, right? Coach is different. A coach is how do you relate to those players? How do you draw things up in order to put them in the best position to win? How do you utilize what the general manager gave you to work with? Like, a coach is like the last line of defense for your team. And if players can respect and trust a Becky Hammond, that to me, once you start seeing women coach men's sports at any level, that's the biggest game changer.
I might be like very jaded in this area, but I feel like we are like light years away from having a woman as a professional coach.
See, I don't think we are. I mean, Becky Hammond's really well regarded, and she has sort of the imprimatur of Greg Popovich, who's probably the best coach in all of the NBA. And I think this Kim Ng situation's, you know, maybe we're not as close as I think we are, Trenny and Ellen, but I really don't feel like we're light years away. And I feel like Becky Hammond, if she got a job in, say, the next 5 years, I would not be surprised.
I mean, she interviewed with the Milwaukee Bucks. I know it's just an interview, but she got an interview, right? To me, it's going to take, I think that domino will fall in the NBA before it falls anywhere else. Yeah. I think we're closer to it than we think.
I do too. I really do. I think, you know, Becky Hammond, I think, is that person. I think she will be the first, and she's really well regarded in league circles, highly respected. I think somebody like Kara Lawson, who was on the Celtics staff and took the job at Duke, if she wanted to go back to the NBA, I think she could do it. I don't know. You know, here's the thing that's a little bit unfair and I think inequitable at this point. I would have a hard time seeing a women's professional coach getting the opportunity that, say, like a Billy Donovan or a Brad Stevens got, where it's like, well, you have no NBA experience as a head coach and we're going to hire you. I feel like Kara would probably have to come back and be an assistant again, which is not right, but I feel like that would happen. But I think there's some good candidates here. As we wind this down, I want to talk to you about this because you call it the end times. Obviously, we're all dealing with the coronavirus, COVID-19. It's markedly changed the way the sports world operates. You were supposed to be at the Summer Olympics this past summer in Tokyo. Do you think we will have a Summer Olympics in 2021?
I'm 50-50 on it. I'd love to sit here and be like, yeah, of course they're going to find a way to do it. I thought there was no way they would cancel it. Like, I thought there was too much money at stake, too much training, just too much commitment from Japan, from athletes, from networks worldwide. Like, there's no way they'll figure out how to do it. And I do think they'll figure out how to do it this summer. I should actually say I'm probably 75-25, because I do think that we've now seen leagues and athletes find out ways to hold events that are safe or safer. I just don't know that it will look like Olympics in the past have looked. Like, I don't know that we'll have will we have a big opening ceremony? Will we have all the pomp and circumstance? Will I be able to go? Or will it be everything will just be done remotely, you know, and we'll watch it from somewhere we'll call games from monitors instead of actually being there. And then you won't have a reporter who's interacting because they can't interact anyway. So I wonder what it'll look like, but I think they'll try really hard to get it done.
All right. That is Trenny Kuznarek of NBC Sports Boston and NBC Sports. We're fortunate enough to have her join us today on the Take 5 podcast. Trenny, thanks for the time. It's always fun to catch up with you. This was so much fun.
Gasper.
Yeah, I miss you too, Tren. This was a lot of fun, and it was always, as always, it's enlightening and educational and entertaining, and you always make me laugh too, which I appreciate.
That's what I'm here for.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. As always, you can catch the Take 5 podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget, we want you to go on there, subscribe, rate. It helps other people find the podcast. We'll catch you next time.